I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Today, we'll outline two controversies in Baltimore that have erupted into legal battles. We'll talk to several experts about public housing in Baltimore. Residents at some public housing developments have been coping this fall with no heat and no water. And yesterday, City Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano said the federal government is now investigating allegations that some of the city's maintenance workers demanded sex in return for repairs. At the top of the hour, charter schools. Baltimore Sun education reporter Erica Green and Will McKenna, chair of the Maryland Alliance of Public Charter Schools, are here to explain the discord between city schools and some of the charters over funding. That's Midday, after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Very glad that you have joined us. We have a lot packed into this hour of Midday. We want to talk about two ongoing controversies in Baltimore. Later in the hour, we're going to talk about public housing scandals in Baltimore, including developments that dealt with no heat or water this fall, and maintenance workers who allegedly demanded sex in return for unit repairs. We'll be joined by a city councilman, a legal aid advocate, and a tenant advocate. We're going to start, though, with another emotional issue, charter schools, and how much of the public school budget they should be able to claim. 14 of the city's 20 public charter schools are suing over funding. In early September, Baltimore City Public Schools presented a new formula that would allocate more money to students with certain characteristics, kids with low income, special education needs, English language learners. That's when 14 charters filed suit over that funding plan. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake asked former Mayor Kurt Schmoke, now president of the University of Baltimore, to facilitate conversations between the two sides. But last week, President Schmoke pulled out of those conversations. Here in the studio to help us understand the dispute is Erica Green, education reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Will McKenna, executive director of AFIA Baltimore Incorporated, a nonprofit that operates three charter schools. He also chairs the Maryland Alliance of Public Charter Schools. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
And am I pronouncing it correctly, AFIA?
Perfect.
Okay, good. We also asked the Baltimore City Schools to be part of the conversation. They did not respond to our request. In a nutshell, given our limited time, Will McKenna, explain to us from your viewpoint, what is the primary issue of this disagreement?
I think there are two things at dispute. First of all, it is what role does the law and the State Board of Education play in funding for charter schools in Baltimore City? And secondly, you have the impact of what has happened with funding for charter schools over the last several years. On the second issue first, what charter school operators have found over the past 4 to 5 years is that the school system has implemented a formula that we've had lots of questions about, and we haven't had a sustainable funding model that is predictable and believable. And that's one core problem. The other big problem is who controls the right to decide what the funding should be. The school system very clearly, the school board very clearly believes, and we saw this in the last formula that they put together and then dropped, they believe that they have the right to determine what the charter funding formula should be. The charter operators think something very differently, and we think, based on the law and based on what the State Board of Education has said, that it is not the local board that has that right. There is a law, and there is guidance, and that law has been...
A state law. So you're saying state law should settle the issue.
We say the State Board of Education and state law should settle the issue, yes.
Erica Green, the proposal that was put forth and has now been pulled back, can you tell us what the relevant parts are? What should we know about that to have this conversation?
Essentially, that formula sought to give everybody a baseline allocation and build up from there. Schools would have gotten, some $5,000, everybody. And if you had...
It's $5,000 per pupil.
Per pupil, my apologies,
That all schools get.
That
charter,
all schools would
public.
Exactly.
Regular public.
And then they would have gotten additional allocations per pupil for students from low-income backgrounds and students who are English language learners. And the district's rationale was that if the charter schools wanted a revenues-based formula, they would disperse their revenue based on how they get it. So the money that they got for low-income students, the money they got from the state for ELL students, they would then disperse it to schools that way. The problem was that traditional and charter schools would have seen some decreases based on that model, given the populations that they served. So it would have affected everybody, but that was the rationale.
And I noticed when you mentioned two of the demographic groups, the mm-hmm. learners of English and low income. Where does special education fit into that?
Special education is a different beast because there is funding that absolutely has to go to schools for special education students. The district already gives additional money to schools for students with disabilities. In a larger context, which I'm sure Will can talk about, there has been some dispute over how that money should be allocated as well. But special education students, federal law, they have to be funded in a very specific way.
And so at this point, is there a new education, a new funding formula that has been proposed by the Central School District?
There has not been. I haven't seen one. When the district withdrew its proposal a few weeks later, it said that it would, by December 1st, come up with a per pupil allocation for charter schools. I asked what that would be, particularly in light of the lawsuit, and at that time the facilitated talks had fallen through, and I had not gotten an answer. So there is definitely a December 1st deadline, though, for a per pupil allocation for the district, charters and non-charters.
Let me just tell our listeners, if you've got a question about the charter school funding issue, you can give us a call, 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Will McKenna, 14 of 34 charter schools.
Yes.
Are suing the city. I think I may have misspoken a minute ago. 14 of 34. Why haven't the majority of charter schools?
So that's a good question. I would say that the majority of the schools, in fact, do share the sentiment that the litigants have. What I think is important for everybody to realize is that charters represent a spectrum. There are all different kinds of operators with all different kinds of beliefs. Some of the operators are going through renewal in a month or so, which means their contracts are renewed. They've made a judgment that it's not the right time for them to participate in litigation. Others, quite honestly, I've thought a lot about this. We had 6 or 7 charter schools that started as what were known as new school initiative schools. They were school system started schools. They were traditional schools, and they converted to charter schools in 2004 and 2005. And I think in some cases, those schools have a sentiment that sides perhaps more with the school system. And we see that continue today, some of the sentiments that come from those schools. And I don't think it's surprising. We do think the majority of charter schools believe in what we're doing. And we're a coalition of charter schools, and not everybody believes the same thing.
Erica Green, so the talks that former Mayor Kurt Schmoke, University of Baltimore President Kurt Schmoke, was supposed to be facilitating are dead.
Yes.
Well, I guess I should
for
ask.
Now.
For now. Have you picked up a sense that they might be revived?
He indicated that if the district and the charters could, made some progress in court, out of court, just based on the parameters that would bring them to the table, he would re-enter. He didn't define exactly what that progress looked like, but they can't be at an impasse. He can't bring two sides to a table that can't even agree on what would bring them there. So, but he did indicate that he would be willing to help out in any way he could in the future.
And Will McKenna, is the lawsuit progressing?
Yes, it is.
What's happening?
The original time for the school system to respond to the complaint was October the 18th. As part of the talks with Kurt Schmoke, President Schmoke, we agreed to extend the deadline by about 18 days that the school system had to respond, but we retained the right to proceed with discovery. So that's where we are. The school system, in a week or so, will respond to the complaint, and we're considering our options in terms of discovery.
So you have not yet actually started asking back the kind of background questions that would go into
we have not
the fact-finding of discovery?
We retain the right to do that and expect to do that, but we haven't proceeded with that.
Jessica is calling us from Baltimore. Jessica, welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you. My question is for Will, and it is, if the lawsuit prevails and there is then a per-pupil funding that is in favor of charter schools, would the charter schools be willing to look at giving some money back to traditional schools?
Thank you for the question, Jessica.
So I think I don't necessarily agree with the premise of the question. The point is that charter school operators, myself, we've been negotiating this. This didn't just start with this latest funding formula. We've been doing this for a very, very long time, 4 years myself, negotiating with the school system. And we think that if the school system will come to the table and negotiate honestly as a partner, that we can get to a place that you get a funding formula that follows the law, and ultimately is beneficial to all schools, because we think that there's a tremendous amount of inefficiency in central office. And if we can find that as a result of this lawsuit, there can, in fact, be more money that goes out to the school system. I would also say people like to say that doing this will bankrupt the school system, and we don't accept that. And I'd be happy to explain that further.
Jessica, I appreciate your calling. As I understand it, Will McKenna, one of the allegations of the charter schools is that the central office has not been transparent about what they're spending money on. What information is it that's missing? Is that what you would try to get in the lawsuit?
I think the narrative of what happened last spring is incredibly important for all families and all schools in Baltimore City. We started in January. The school system released a budget. There was a suggestion that there was a budget problem, but no real number that was impactful. The governor cuts the budget, $35 million. Dr. Thornton comes back out, talks about a $70 million problem. Then it goes to a $108 million problem. And then in their budget document, which is released to the to public, it went to a $141 million problem. So it's not just charter schools that are having trouble understanding what's going on with the school system's budget. We are operators. This is our work. And so we're going to get those answers through our work. But I think the entire general public has an interest in what's going on with the school system's budget and why they're not being transparent.
Erica Green, you cover the schools day in, day out. Are the schools able to provide the kinds of information that Will McKenna is talking about? Or will that require a whole new way of bookkeeping?
I mean, I would assume that internal accounting documents are there. I mean, the charter schools have asked for invoices and purchase orders. I mean, very detailed financial documentation. And I mean, I've seen purchase orders. I've seen stacks of them in the past, so I know they exist. What hasn't been clear is why that hasn't been turned over. I mean, the school system has been, you know, sat down with me and taken me through line item by line item what things cost. So that's very much understood. I think the issue here is not looking at how much things cost, but what's actually spent. And that's something that's been, you know,
I'm
rather
not sure
hard,
I'm understanding the distinction that you're making between what things cost and what is spent.
Well, I mean, in every other, maybe not every other, but at least once a month, you know, there are budget appropriations, or the school system at a board meeting will make budget adjustments because, you know, they budgeted $80 million for transportation and it costs $120. So things fluctuate all the time, and what's set in the budget and made public is basically just kind of budgeting, right? It's not actually what things cost. If something happens in the middle of the year, those numbers change. So it seems to me that's what's at issue here is not just what you say things are going to cost, but what they actually cost at the end of the year when you reconcile your books.
About a little more than a week ago, the school CEO, Gregory Thornton, sent a letter to families and staff, which was made public. He said the funding should be set to give charters, quote, flexibility and autonomy, close quote. But he also said that it's his duty to, quote, make certain that the approach we use is sustainable and protects the long-term financial stability of the district as a whole, close quote. So he seems to be talking, framing this in terms of some kind of balance. Do you see it that way? Is this a question of finding the right balance, or is it a question of just finding waste in the central office that could then be shared with the charters, money?
I think the core issue extends far beyond charters. I've been working in Baltimore City and for 25 years. There were two times, 1996 and 97, 2003 and 2004, when Baltimore City public school system faced tremendous financial challenges. The 96 time led to the city-state partnership. In 2003 and 2004, we had to have then Mayor O'Malley and funders essentially bail out the school system. In neither of those cases were there any charter schools in Baltimore City. And then last year, we run $108 million budget gap deficit. I think at the core of this is the school system's ability to manage money effectively and manage its portfolio of charter schools effectively in a strategic way that helps the school system get better. That's the ideal. And I do think that Dr. Thornton's letter was very divisive because he's pitting charter schools against traditional schools in ways that are completely unnecessary.
Let me take one other call. Britta in Baltimore is calling us. Britta, welcome.
Hi, yes. I actually have two quick questions. One is, why is it that these charters filed a lawsuit, which is going to be incredibly expensive for the city to defend against, and take further money away from students, regardless of whether they're charter or in the city school system? And the second is, why are charters opposed to providing additional funding for underprivileged kids when we know that it takes, you know, more funds to help get those students where they need to be? And charters are not required, as public schools are, to take those kids into their enrollment.
I appreciate the questions. I think Will McKenna may again challenge your premise, but Will McKenna.
Yes. The first question, can you quickly say the first question about
why a lawsuit?
Yes.
It's going to be expensive to do a lawsuit.
Again, I'll speak on a very personal level, and I have been personally invested in this issue for 4 years. And I'm running schools, and I have another job, and it's volunteer time, and I did it on behalf of the coalition. 4 years we worked, hours and hours, to come to a resolution. We couldn't do it. We were able to frame the debate, identify the problems, but we couldn't compromise. And when you can't compromise, it becomes the responsible thing to seek outside help. Now, you can either do that through mediation. We were very willing to participate in mediation with Kurt Schmoke, or you can go to court. So that's why court. And then the second question?
The second question, I think we have lost Britta, but the second question was, it's coming back to me. Erica, do you remember?
I do remember it. Why do you not agree with a methodology that would fund, give schools more money for low-income students who we know are more expensive to educate?
A couple things. First of all, the state funding formula provides that charter schools not only contribute to students with high needs and non-public students and specialized transportation, we are paying our fair share of that. I think our core problem is you have now this school system, this CEO that's defining equity in a certain way and then has funding following the child in a certain way that fits this particular board and this particular CEO's definition. I would remind people that Dr. Alonzo came in 2007 and 8. He defined equity in a certain way. We know that is fair student funding. So we're moving away from that to something else. And our position is the State Board of Education and the State Court of Appeals have a funding formula that defines equity. And that is the law. And we believe we should be adhering to the law. And I would also add that there are opportunities within the law to negotiate with the school system. We're willing to do that. We just won't be mandated to.
We need to wrap this up. Erica, before we go, what is the process from now on? What do you expect to happen next and what kind of timeline?
I mean, I'm expecting, as the district said, that we'll see a formula and a per pupil allocation for all schools on December 1st, including charter schools. As far as the court proceedings, I have no idea what to expect. I anticipate this will go on for at least a year. I mean, that won't be settled by December 1st. So, I just expect that the district wants the budget to be done by January, I believe. So schools are going to be planning based on a formula that, could or could not stick. And we'll just have to wait to see how this all pans out. But I anticipate that this will go to court and, it could throw everything into the air again. But the district seems to be proceeding as if, it has to set a budget, it has to fund schools, and that's what we're going to do.
Okay, we'll be counting on you to keep us informed about it. Thank you.
Of course.
Erica Green is the education reporter for the Baltimore Sun. There's a link to her articles about this ongoing story on our website, WIPR.org. Will McKenna is chair of the Maryland Alliance of Public Charter Schools and executive director of the nonprofit AFIA Baltimore Incorporated, which operates 3 charter schools. Time for a break. When we get back, we'll discuss the controversy surrounding the Housing Authority of Baltimore City. Are you a resident of public housing in Baltimore? We'd like to have you join our conversation during the next segment. What are the conditions like? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at WIPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're turning now to a different issue in the news, problems in the city's public housing agency, the Housing Authority of Baltimore City. The Monument East apartments on Asquith Street and Lakeview Towers and Reservoir Hill, Bolton Hill, have each lost heat and water for days this fall. And 11 women who live in public housing have filed a federal suit alleging maintenance workers demanded sexual favors before repairs were made to their units. The Housing Authority, known by its initials HABC, is the federal agency that operates public housing units in Baltimore. It is run by Paul Graziano, who also chairs is the city's housing commissioner and the head of the city's Housing and Community Development Agency, or HCD. Reporters, including WIPR's Kenneth Burns, asked Commissioner Graziano yesterday about the recent water and heat outages.
I think in terms of the first case, we've learned a couple of things about the protocol and how to best deal with it. Mm-hmm. So we're giving giving more early warning and options. The second building that went down actually was nowhere as near as serious as the first. For instance, they had full running water. They actually had heat, although it was over 70 degrees all weekend, and they had hot water, but it was less than ideal. We offered every one of those residents an opportunity to go to a hotel. Mm-hmm. Not one person wanted to go because the building was basically not ideal, but it was okay. And the part what came on Monday morning, the service was fully restored by midday Monday.
Commissioner Graziano said yesterday that the Housing Authority was doing, quote, doing as much as humanly possible, close quote. He estimated it would cost $800 million to renovate or repair all of the city's units of public housing. He also spoke about Baltimore's participation in the Obama administration's rental assistance demonstration program. The city will sell some public housing units to developers, and the developers will complete upgrades in exchange for tax credits.
We've got a package for about 4,100 units under the rental assistance demonstration, where we will be doing $350 million worth of work. That work will begin as early as before the end of the year, because we're closing on some of those deals in the next week. I wish we had other opportunities to do more of that, but we're going to do everything we can to address all of the maintenance issues on an ongoing basis.
Joining us in the studio today are 3 people who know a lot about public housing in Baltimore. City Councilman Carl Stokes represents the 12th Councilmanic District on Baltimore's East Side. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Also with us, Greg Countess, Director of Advocacy for Housing and Community Development at Legal Aid in Baltimore. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Wallace Craig, a resident at Lakeview Towers, where he is also president of the Tenant Council. Thanks
thanks for being here with us.
And thank you for having me.
So, Councilman Stokes,
yes.
Let me just remind our listeners, you can be part of this conversation, too. Call us at 410-662-8780 or toll-free. You can call 866-661-9309 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Councilman Stokes, this week the City Council passed a resolution calling for an investigative hearing into some of the controversies at the Housing Authority. What's behind that? What do you this was your resolution. Why did you introduce it, and what do you expect such a hearing to accomplish?
Yeah. Let me just mention that I am a former resident. I grew up in public housing, Latrobe housing projects over in East Baltimore near Greenmount Avenue. Obviously a different time altogether, it seems, because there was never issues of maintenance or malfunctioning that wasn't taken care of right away. I know that was a very long time ago, but I have said to this one because particularly I was actually driving into City Hall on Monday a week ago and listening to one of the talk shows in Baltimore City, and I heard a deputy commissioner on the radio saying that he was on his way to Lakeview Towers to look into a problem that apparently started the Thursday before. And he said he didn't know about it because he was out of town. And one of the talk show co-hosts said, well, what about Paul Graziano? And he said that Paul Graziano was out of town also. And so I thought the talk show host correctly said, well, wait a minute. Are you telling me that a problem that breaks out in emergency situations, no heat, no water, could happen 4 days prior, and it has to wait until one of you two guys are in town to know about it? You didn't know about it. No one called you about it. There's no one sitting at a phone saying this is emergency management, emergency maintenance. And so I did. I actually turned my car around. It's not my district, but I went over to Lakeview and saw Mr. Wallace and others and tried to figure out why the heck was this going on. And then a week later, a similar thing happens at Monument East, which is in my district, and I go there, and then I find other instances going on, and we all have heard since late September about the instances of allegations of women who couldn't get repairs done at the Gilmore and Westport and Govan's housing projects until or unless they did sexual favors for some maintenance people, and they were still on their jobs. And I just thought that this was outrageous, what was going on, and that we needed some real answers real soon. And so I put the bill in, which was eventually co-signed by all of the other members of the Baltimore City Council. We'd be holding a hearing. It hasn't been announced yet, but I assume within the next 30 days.
Okay. Wallace Craig, you live at Lakeview Towers, right?
Not only do I live there, I'm the president of the City Council.
And how long have you lived there?
15 years.
What is it like there?
Well, you know, every development needs work, and we understand that every development needs work. But for this past week, what we've gone through, hopefully we'll never have to go through that situation again. No water at all. Since I've lived there, it has not been a critical situation as this one. When one of my residents called me, and I was out of town as well, but what happened was when they said the water, we have no water, and I was like, what do you mean we don't have no water? I thought they meant we didn't have hot water, because that has happened before. But the resident expressed to me, we have no water. And I was thinking to myself, my mindset was, since when? And they're alluding that it happened Friday, but my residents, and I'm going to believe what my residents said, they said, we have not had water since Thursday. My plight was, oh my. And who left us here under these conditions with no water? When I had got back to the building, not only did we not have water, we didn't have heat. So we were out with water.
That, and those two are connected at Lake Tower, right?
I would imagine, because
you have radiator heat.
Or steam heat or whatever it is. I'm not.
But the heat was out because the water was out.
Exactly. You know, and my thought was, who left us in these squalid conditions and says, oh, well, the park will be here Monday? Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
And is this, you said that this particular problem hasn't happened. until this point, what has been your assessment of maintenance at Lakeview Tower?
The assessment of maintenance at Lakeview Towers is pretty good. Pretty good. But on this, for instance, somebody definitely dropped the ball. You know, and nobody picked the ball up until I got back to Lakeview Towers. You know, and I said, we're not going to stand for this. We can't stand for this. And we have to let them know. All I want is for my residents to be treated with dignity and respect. When I got on my floor, the stench was so horrible because of the gallons of water that they gave us was not enough to flush the toilets. Yes, they did step up, but not soon enough.
Greg Countess, you work for Legal Aid. You're in constant contact, I assume, with public housing residents throughout the city. When you heard about the Lakeview Tower situation, did it surprise you, or is this something you've come to expect?
Well, it didn't surprise me, and that's because I have been in previous meetings with the commissioner when he's talked about the disinvestment by the federal government, and I'm aware of that because I read the newspaper and we follow it, in terms of funding for public housing. But there are other problems that are endemic in the Housing Authority of Baltimore City. So Legal Aid Bureau, which has over 15 offices throughout the state, has an office here in Baltimore City, and it has a unit that's dedicated to housing problems. And in talking to the folks that do that work, who are lawyers and paralegals who represent tenants who are in public housing, take the Gilmore Homes, for instance. It's good that Mr. Craig has a good experience with maintenance folks
Until this fall.
Right, until this fall in Lakeview. But in Gilmore, we had a gentleman who spent an entire winter with no heat. And when the advocates, when he finally came in to see us, and the advocate went to the Housing Authority and spoke to their attorney, the attorney told him or told her that the gentleman had not put in a work order. Work order is part of the process for getting work done. Well, that's just inconceivable that somebody would sit the entire winter with no heat and then, instead of complaining to the person that provides them the housing, their landlord, the housing authority, they would come in and talk to Legal Aid. We don't control the heat, but we do help people to address a no-heat situation. And we went in, we made the complaint, they fixed the heat. And so we find that that's a problem, and it may not be in every housing development in the Housing Authority of Baltimore City, but it's there.
When you say that's a problem, you mean
a problem of
communication is not working and the complaints are not getting to where they actually could be addressed?
Or, yes. We don't know what happens to the complaints, but we do know that residents do make complaints about conditions in their homes. And they're complaining about things like mice infestation. They're complaining about no heat. They're complaining about bed bugs. They're complaining about mold. And when you have children in some of these homes who have things like asthma, then these conditions aggravate those conditions and are life-threatening.
Right. They're not just an inconvenience. Councilman Stokes,
yes.
Until the situations that so struck you this fall, what kinds of complaints or what kinds of feedback were you getting as a councilman about public housing from your constituents? Well, I mean, was this something you thought was about to really erupt into a big problem, or did you think things were working pretty well, or what?
Well, no, they're not working pretty well. They haven't been working pretty well. I have seen firsthand mold in Latrobe Home Housing Projects, for example, and reported such to HABC when I've seen it personally. I didn't understand how or why people would still be living in dwelling units that had mold in them, fresh mold on the wall that you could see. I thought it was outrageous. And so I've made calls in the past to have people moved from their dwelling units immediately because they had made a complaint that there was mold, and I could walk in and see it. Someone other than me should have walked in and have seen it also and moved people immediately.
I have to take a break. I'm going to thank you because I'm going to have the chance to talk to you at greater length next week.
Yes.
But before I let you go today, do you think Commissioner Graziano should resign?
I wouldn't make that decision, frankly. I think that there's three investigations going on now, and I think also is our own investigation and city council. And I think at the end of the day of those four investigations, then we should actually look hard at who should be where.
I appreciate you talking about it with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting
Councilman
me.
Carl Stokes, who represents the 12th District in East Baltimore. Another quick break now. When we return, we'll continue our discussion about public housing in Baltimore, and we'll still be here with Greg Countess of the Legal Aid in Baltimore and Wallace Craig, president of the Tenant Council at Lakeview Towers. And we look forward to your calls at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're continuing our discussion now about public housing in Baltimore. With me in the studio are Greg Countess, Director of Advocacy for the Housing and Community Economic Development at Legal Aid in Baltimore, and Wallace Craig, a resident of Lakeview Towers, president of the Tenant Council there. We'd also like you to be part of this conversation. Do you live in public housing? Have you had issues with maintenance or any other thing in public housing? What are your thoughts about this? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I want to raise, we've sort of referred to this, I want to go a little bit deeper into this other problem. Last month, 11 tenants filed a federal lawsuit against the agency alleging that they were asked to do sexual favors with Housing Authority maintenance workers in exchange for repairs. Days after that story broke, the state's attorney in Baltimore announced it was investigating these allegations. And yesterday, Housing Authority Executive Director Paul Graziano said he'd been informed that the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the federal housing agency, was also investigating these charges. Here's part of what Commissioner Graziano said about the Housing Authority's response to the lawsuit.
What I can say is that as soon as we became aware, we have taken very strong actions. I've sat down with, I think, eight of the named plaintiffs with their counsel. We had a good discussion. We have taken very severe personnel actions. I can't discuss the details related to that. We are continuing to investigate. We are working with all parties. We'll be visiting a number of sites with the residents. I've met with the Citywide Resident Advisory Board twice, briefed them fully, sent out a letter to all 10,000-plus public housing residents, explaining to them that this is inappropriate behavior, explaining to them that if they have any evidence or any inkling of somebody trying to do something inappropriate with them in that regard, they should call us immediately. We have a hotline number. If they believe it's criminal activity, they should also obviously call the Baltimore City Police. And my understanding is that one of the 11 named plaintiffs has, in fact, filed a complaint with the Baltimore City Police. And I also believe that the state's attorney is investigating, doing a criminal investigation around these allegations. We're working cooperatively in any investigations of that sort. This is totally unacceptable behavior, and anybody who engages in it will be dealt with in the harshest terms. I am confident that we will address each and every case that is brought to our attention.
That was Housing Commissioner Paul Graziano speaking yesterday. He mentions a hotline number that they have set up for calls from public housing residents, and I confess I don't have it with me, and I'm asking whether we might be able to track that down while we're still on the air. Their hotline number, our number, if you would like to join this conversation, is 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Wallace Craig, let me ask you what goes through your mind, both when you hear about all these allegations and when you hear the response that the housing commissioner gave yesterday. Do you feel that residents of public housing are getting the respect, the dignity that you talked about a few minutes ago, or do you think that's missing?
I definitely think it is missing. You know what I'm saying? And if some of the allegations that are made against these workers who work for us, understandably, they work for us. And I think deplorable for somebody to offer a service. I mean, come on. That is the craziest thing I ever heard. And they should be dealt with as harshly as possible. I would be remiss in saying that, and Greg had alluded to the fact that I was happy with some of the maintenance staff earlier. No, we do have our problems. The elevators are always breaking down. Just this morning, the elevators were broke down. When I came back yesterday, they were broke down as well, you know, and I had to get to another appointment, and I got people on that. Some of our vulnerable individuals live in these buildings. I have residents from 19 to 95 years old, and how dare they have to live in some of the conditions that they live in. What I was saying was, due to the fact that these individuals are our landlords, and that's what they are, you know, we are trying to work with them. What happened is it does not do well with me, because we had to have a protest, and for somebody to say, okay, they do matter. We do matter.
Tell me about the protest. This was when?
We did a protest on Sunday. You know, when I got back to my building and the conditions, I told you about the stench in mm-hmm. the building and their response, which definitely was not fast enough for mm-hmm. especially me. You know, I represent 310 units of individuals who are looking to me to say, what are we going to do about this? You know what I'm saying? And the only thing that we could have done by this was let everybody know what we were going through. And we're still going through some stuff. You know, yes, they are trying. HABC is trying to step up, but we need more. We need more. We can never, ever go through this. We should never, ever go through this situation again. Also, at Gilmore, oh, my God, if they are doing what they're saying that they're doing at Gilmore, you know, 8% of the city's population are public housing residents, and we need to be treated fairer as well as respected. You know, we have people that work for us that don't. You go to the management, they don't respect us. You go to the maintenance, they don't. Because at the end of the day, they go home. And we are left to live in these deplorable situations. The elevators are always broke. If the heat is on, it's too hot. If it's too cold, it's too cold. You know, something needs to be done.
Paul, Greg Countess, I understand you run a housing preservation project.
That's correct.
For legal aid that aims to help tenants better preserve their subsidized housing. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, we work with residents in a number of different subsidized housing programs. And as I said to you off air, what we do is called or described as community lawyering. And what community lawyering simply is as with all lawyers, it's client-centered. Clients are first. Clients help to determine what it is, what the issues and the problems are, and help to define what the goal or objective is. And so in looking at that, we work with, for instance, we've worked with and are working with residents at the O'Donnell Heights and who have the O'Donnell Heights Tenant Council, who are in the midst of a redevelopment. And one of the things that we assisted them with is to take a look at gathering facts, analyzing the situation, and coming up with what they call a declaration for redevelopment.
A declaration for redevelopment.
Right. That at its forefront says, and asks the Housing Authority to recognize, asks the City of Baltimore to recognize, that housing is a human right. And since it is a human right, then there are certain principles that have to be adhered to in order for to meet that particular standard. One of them is transparency in the process. The other is participation. So when Mr. Craig talks about not being respected, a lot of times what he's talking about is that residents feel that there's not meaningful participation in the management and operation of these buildings, and they're the ones who have to live with the consequence of failure, of mistakes. And since they are already, that is, since the Housing Authority already, under federal law, is required engage residents, and for residents to be in the position to meaningfully participate in the management and operation of that development, then residents are not asking for anything more than what the law already requires.
So how do you make that happen?
Well, I mean, we make that happen by a number of situations. So, one of the things that I always talk to my clients about, and they always talk to me, is how do you have leverage? And there are different ways that you have leverage in any sort of redevelopment process. And what we do is we seek out, we find out, and analyze where they're going to get their financing. Whatever pit stops do they have to make in order to get the approvals to develop that housing? And what residents have decided to do in many of those instances is that if they can't get satisfaction, then they show up in those places and they, as Mr. Craig talked about, they may protest. We can't organize protests. Legal aid doesn't do that, but they can do that themselves if they determine that they want to do that. Or they appear and they testify. So to give you, for instance, with the O'Donnell Heights situation, what happened is that we knew that there was a contract that had to go through the Board of Estimates, and residents raised a protest to that contract. And residents came in and testified, and we were able then to have a meaningful dialogue and negotiation with the developer, with the Housing Authority, about those issues that concerned residents.
Wallace Craig, take us inside what happens when there's a repair needed. I mean, what does a tenant have to do? So we'll put aside the allegations for a minute at Gilmore Homes. How is the system supposed to work, and how do you see it working as a tenant council president? What does a resident of public housing have to do to get a repair started? How long does it tend to take? Is there, in terms of organizing, is there activity that you need to pursue in order to get repairs done?
What the process should be is you call in a work order, and they retrieve the work order. And depending on the severity of the work order, whether it's an emergency need or whether it's just a routine need, I don't know exactly the time frame for it to get done, but my hope would be it's not over a week. That would be too long for anybody to wait. In some for instances, it has gone way over a week. Also, I'm hearing from other developments that it takes much longer than the time allotted for this. I don't know who's watching the watchers, but somebody somewhere is definitely dropping the ball on the work orders. And then when you have a maintenance staff, because we're getting ready to get into the rental assistant demonstration, the morale of the staff is so low because they don't know what's going to happen to their jobs. You know, they don't have, they just don't know, you know. So it affects us because they sit there and they've gotten complacent and said to themselves, well, I'm going to be gone soon. I'm not going to do this, this, or that. But you still get a paycheck.
You certainly have given us some insights into the issues that have to be sorted out, and there will certainly be a lot of attention to it. I appreciate your both being here. Wallace Craig, president of the Tenant Council at Lakeview Towers, and Greg Countess, director of advocacy for Housing and Community Development at Legal Aid in Baltimore. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.